Drive Guys, Kyle Draper and Whitey Gleason. We know that the national media is not always kind to the king. So how nice is it here to have in the Ringer a really optimistic piece focusing on the king's short and long-term futures? Nice enough to join us, the author of that piece. Of course, he's the former editor-in-chief for the California Aggie out of UC Davis, the senior NBA writer for The Ringer, Howard Beck. How are you today, Howard?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well. Thank you for that very kind introduction. I, of course, always, always, always appreciate the UC Davis shout-outs. And the California Aggie shout-out is like, that's just, that's like icing on the cake. That's just awesome.
You're welcome. You write about plenty of room for growth for the Kings here. What would you say this roster, and I know you were just out here, Howard, what would you say this roster needs the most going forward?
Oh, man, it's, you know, there's so many different ways to look at this. And look, I'm one who, and you know, you could tell by the tenor of the story, I believe that in this league, there's a certain amount of patience that you need with especially young teams that's not always easy to come by. And so my answer to what they need is tempered by that, because like the easy thing to say would be like, I don't know, go out and find yourself a top 10 player, because they've got, you know, two really good players who are, you know, top, you know, in a given year, top 15 to 20, 25. They both made all NBA before. So, but there's a huge difference in this league between having a Fox and a Sabonis versus having a Jokic or a Steph or a LeBron in his prime, right? So I think the interesting thing for the Kings, and this applies to most of the league, right? Because like the MVP results will come out in the next few weeks. And, you know, Jokic probably wins it again. And you know, Shea will be on there, and Luka, Giannis. If you don't have one of those guys, then you have to find another path. So having at least two guys who are all NBA caliber, as the Kings have, is a start. Can you get a third all NBA-ish caliber guy? Can you get two all NBAs plus a guy who's off and on all-star? Can you just have a really incredibly well-calibrated supporting cast? Because that's kind of what Denver has, right? Like I cited Denver multiple times in the story, and for good reason. They've done this kind of a different way. Yes, Jokic has become a generational superstar, not to be, asterisked away in any of this, but Jamal Murray, while all-star caliber, has not been an all-star or all-NBA. And Aaron Gordon was, you know, a draft bust in Orlando, or at least that would be the way that they would, I'm sure, portray him there. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope bounced around. And Michael Porter Jr. was, obviously an injury concern. And also, like, they just have a really well-calibrated supporting cast. It's not star-studded. And so there are alternate ways to build. If Keegan Murray just makes a leap, and that's totally, you know, plausible, now you have three stars. I mean, if you have three, you know, whatever, top 25, top 30, you're in business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you still need to fill out the rest of the roster. And I think their bench is pretty weak, unfortunately. There's other things they can do around the margins. But a Keegan Murray leap changes everything. Mm-hmm. Without that leap, it becomes, do you have enough movable pieces and picks to try to go get their version of, as I again alluded to in the story, some version of a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Aaron Gordon, right? Like, without those guys, the Nuggets are not the Nuggets. As great as Jokic is, they're not a championship team without those two guys. And those are guys that anybody could have gotten. They were available players, mm-hmm, on reasonable contracts who are not superstars. And you can build that way in this league. So that's the task for Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox in that front office.
The Ringer's Howard Beck joining the Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports 1140. Howard, I'm listening to you, and I agree. You know, I feel like, however, in the NBA, you need the guy. And so let me ask you this, the timeline of things. Do you have the guy first and then win the championship, or does winning the championship produce the guy, if you know what I mean? And if so, yeah, can De'Aaron ascend to that? Can he be that?
I mean, that's a really difficult thing to various points in the trajectory of, say, Giannis, who's been a two-time MVP and finals MVP, or Jokic, there were moments where you would have looked at them and said, man, there's some really interesting stuff going on here. This guy's got some real talent, and there's an outline of somebody special here. I don't know what levels they'll reach. And, you know, then you become an MVP, but you haven't won a championship yet. And it's like, all right, well, fine. You were the best player statistically this season, and your team won a lot of games, but you know, you haven't won at the highest level. So there's always these doubts. There's always another bar to cross. And yeah, sometimes we don't know that a guy is the guy with a capital T and a capital G until they actually show it. But I also do think there are different, you know, tiers of stars in this league. And is Fox ever going to be in that top tier where we're talking about him in an MVP discussion? I don't know. You would have never said Jalen Brunson was going to be in that discussion, yeah. But he was fifth on my ballot this year, and he was probably fifth and maybe higher on a lot of other people's ballots. I don't think he's going to win, obviously, but, you know, to go from second-round pick, bench player, role player, guy who when the Knicks signed him, people thought they were overpaying, to suddenly being one of the top 10 to 15 players in the league, at least for this season, and probably for the foreseeable future, like that, you know, these things do happen. So I'm never going to sell short any player. De'Aaron Fox is incredibly talented. I think he's about all the right things. And, you know, we'll see.
Howard Beck is with us, senior NBA writer for The Ringer. It's an excellent post on the Kings that I think he just posted yesterday. And you write in the piece, Howard, of course, about how the vibe it was different this year. You were just out here the April 11th game against New Orleans, contrasting that to what we had here last year. How much of the fan, and we've been talking about this all year, how much of the fan letdown do you think is due to maybe some unrealistic expectations coming into this year?
Yeah, and I just want to say, too, that having come out there for a couple of games, it was, you know, the Pelicans and Suns on the back-to-back nights. The most important part, personally, was that, aside from getting to visit some family out there, which was very important, I got one of those free purple cowbells.
So oh!
After, you know, 20-something years after being tortured by the big
yes,
cowbell.
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
when I was covering the Lakers, I now have my own cowbell, and I'm very happy about that. So it's sitting on my bookcase. Obviously I'm watching this from afar, but, you know, obviously I have my California roots, and I was, you know, when I was at Davis, it was during the very dark time of that Kings franchise. And I, you know, like I have so much respect for the Kings fans and the passion of those fans, again, having lived through all the Lakers-Kings series. And I was really happy for people last season when they have this big breakthrough, and you could just feel what a combination of, you know, relief and exhilaration and just the thrill of it all. And it was great. And to me, it was just so interesting this season. In the preseason, I was on with Deuce and Mo talking about the other podcast or whatever, talking about, yeah. Listen, I my fear for the Kings this year is that everybody's going to expect that this will be linear, that they'll just take the next leap, because that's what everybody expects in this league. You break through, and then it's like, okay, cool, next year it's the second round or the conference finals. And I thought, given that they were pretty much the same team, and given the way that the West was, you know, people getting healthy, teams adding players, the Kings might be just as good as they were and sink. And that's exactly what happened. And I'm not often right in October about what's going to happen, but that one you could kind of see coming. And if people are disappointed, I get it. I'm sure that, you know, Kings fans out there, I'm sure have a really strange mix of feelings about this season, but they were pretty much the same team, give or take a couple of wins. And yeah, there's a bunch of frustrating losses along the way to bad teams and blown 20-point leads. And, I get all of that, but I think that they're, you know, they're not backsliding. They might backslide relative to the rest of the league getting better, but those things are fluid. And as I again note in the story, like, you know, the Suns are built around Kevin Durant, who is very, you know, much closer to the end than the beginning, and LeBron's closer to the end, and Steph is closer to the end, and Kawhi Leonard is closer. Like, there's all these teams in that glut in the middle of the West that, you know, are going to kind of age out. And so if the Kings can just keep evolving, growing, add a piece here or there, I think they're in good shape. But no, it's not always going to be this steady rise from season to season where you get to 48 wins and then 50 and then a championship. It's rarely that way.
Howard Beck joining us here. Howard, let's continue that conversation because you do talk about the patience. And I think from a Kings fan's perspective, it's hard to be patient when I'm watching Minnesota and young Anthony Edwards in the playoffs. I'm watching OKC, a young, talented team, number one in the West. I'm watching the Pelicans destroy us six times. So how difficult is it to be patient when in this arms race of a Western Conference?
Very, very, because if you're feeling it as fans and media, and you know, certainly ownership is going to be feeling it, and the front office is going to be feeling it. Like everybody would love to talk about the need to be patient, and they do at times, usually in hushed tones in this league. Like, it's hard to, I mean, sometimes in more than hushed tones, right? Like, you are trying to message to your fans too, like, hey guys, be patient with us, please don't yell. But it is hard because the pressure is always there to win, and you know the lifespans of teams are shorter than ever because contracts are shorter than ever, and stars hopscotch around the league, and so you can't. There's a difference between being patient and being lackadaisical or ambivalent or just sitting in cruise control. Like, you're never in cruise control, but patience just simply means, you know, not breaking things up too soon, right? Like, the Kings have a bad habit, as you guys know, of firing coaches and front offices every couple of years, sometimes because they hired the wrong people to begin with, but sometimes they had the right people. Hello, Michael Malone. I don't know why Denver keeps coming back into this, but they do. you need to hire the right people and then be patient and let them do their jobs. And then those guys need to be patient with the young players that they've acquired or drafted and give a team time to grow and gel and see what their potential is. Now, as soon as you think, you know what, maybe we've just plateaued. Okay. Patience time is over. You know, figure out who your core essential people are and swap out some of the others. But the Nuggets took a long time to get where they were again. And there were definitely calls years ago, not that long ago, for that. Well, you know what? Jokic needs a better co-star. Maybe they need to swap out Jamal Murray for somebody else.
Yeah.
And where would they be today if they had succumbed to that? And they bided their time, and they pounced at the right time to get, again, the guys like Aaron Gordon and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Like, I hate to keep harping on that, but they are such the ideal example. The Bucks too, right? Like, the Bucks don't break through until they acquire Jrue Holiday. And that's another one of those where it's an opportunistic move. Was Jrue Holiday on the top of everyone's wish list at the time? Probably not. Maybe he should have been. But he, again, not a guy who's a top five player or a superstar in the common definition. But those guys come available every so often. And the patience thing is, make sure you've held back enough of your picks or other assets to make a deal when one of those guys becomes available.
Yeah, we're talking with Howard Beck from The Ringer. Howard, we've been talking. You write about how tough the West is. You just mentioned it there. It's been that way for years. Looks like, though, next year, the West, that'll be a walk in the park for the Kings, right? Nothing to worry about in the West next year, right?
Oh, man. Well, and that's the tough thing, too. I will note, because I think Kyle mentioned it a minute ago, like, when you look at the top of the West, like, the Nuggets aren't going anywhere. And if you look at the key players who are anchoring the teams that finished at the top, they're better than the guys the Kings have. That's not a knock on the Kings, but like Shea and Anthony Edwards and Jokic, like, these are difference makers at a different level. So, you know, that part's tough because you're not expecting to leapfrog them anytime soon, but other things will come into play too, right? Like, the Timberwolves have tax issues and, you know, there's been speculation for over a year now around the league that they're going to have to move off of Karl Anthony Towns, that even the Naz Reid re-signing last summer was perhaps in part because they knew they needed to, have an alternative if they move Towns. They'll probably get a boatload of stuff back for Towns too, by the way. But tax concerns will come into play. Other things will come into play. There will, you know, nothing is as obvious or predictable as it seems in the moment.
Howard Beck joining us here, the Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports, 1140. Howard, how do you view Domantas Sabonis on a championship contender? Is he a number three? What does he need to improve on? You know, what's the perfect complement of players around him? Because we were just having this discussion, and I'm looking at De'Aaron Fox, and I would actually like to see the ball more in Fox's hands, even more so than it is. But it's hard to do when you're running the offense through Doma. So how do they maximize the offense and their drive to the playoffs, you know, with Domantas Sabonis as a centerpiece?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, it's not just that he's the centerpiece, he's the center. And yeah. In this league, you usually rely on your center to be, you know, a rim protector and a defensive hub. That's not who Domantas Sabonis is. Now, he's a great rebounder and a great defensive rebounder, and those things matter too. He can be good enough defensively, but he's not a classic rim protector. But then again, here we go back to Denver, neither is Jokic. And the Nuggets found a way to go from bottom third defensively to respectable defensively to, I think this season, maybe they actually got the top 10 in defensive efficiency. And then you would have never, ever, ever predicted that or said it was even possible, because you would have said you can't do it with that kind of center. So there's proof of concept there again. And again, this goes back to, can you find your Aaron Gordon and your Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? Because if your perimeter defense is shorn up, and if you've got a lot of big, athletic, long, switchable guys, then it's less pressure on your big man. So that's one way. You know, Indiana already tried the other way and just, you know, concluded that it wasn't working to have Sabonis and Miles Turner together, even though Turner is a shot blocker. And it's like, oh, well, so that should be the ideal pairing. And no, Sabonis isn't really a shooter, so he's not going to stretch the defense. But, hey, Turner can, because he is a three-point shooter. That seemed like it should have been the right combination, but it wasn't. And the Pacers needed to make a change. So I don't think it's bringing in another center, moving Sabonis back to power forward. So, you know, where does that leave you? I'm not sure. But I have to believe that a player with that much talent as Domantas Sabonis has, you find a way to put the pieces around him that allow him to flourish and that can hide some of his deficiencies.
Howard Beck with us. And Howard, earlier you mentioned your ballot, and I know who you vote for is your business. And so if you don't want to answer this, we totally understand, respectfully, but tomorrow we find out who the sixth man of the year is. And I'm wondering if you might be willing to share with us who got your vote for sixth man of the year, because obviously we're very excited about the possibilities here in Sacramento.
I had Monk second behind Naz Reid, which I know is just going to drive people nuts.
Well, good night. Thanks.
Been real. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Look, Malik Monk had a really strong case. And, you know, the injury hurt him in part. Naz Reid just having an incredible season was just part of it, too. Like, they were like, it was almost a coin flip between the two, to be honest. And the thing is with these ballots, you know, like, we all debate these things to death. We agonize over it. And I know for most of us, you know, who vote, it is agonizing. Like, you spend hours poring over this stuff, and, you know, no one's paying us to be voters. We're just, you know, doing it because it's a responsibility, and it's you know, somewhat of an honor, and someone's got to do it. But it takes a lot of time and thought and agonizing. And there are times where it feels like I'm just splitting hairs. And this was one of those. Like, I could have, if I had clicked Malik Monk instead, I would feel no better or worse about it today than had I clicked Naz Reid, which I did. Like, it was that close. They're both deserving, but you have to pick at some point. And so you start splitting hairs, and you start looking at games played, and you start looking at win totals too. Because that's the thing, like, sixth man of the year, I know people look at it as like, oh, this is a purely individual award. It's not. Like, I would not have put, and I didn't, Bogdan Bogdanovic on, because he was an incredible sixth man for the Hawks this year. The Hawks blew. Like, the Hawks were a crap team. I'm sorry. Like, what is the point of being the best sixth man if you're on a team that can barely make the play-in?
Right.
So, extrapolating from there, Naz Reid's sixth man role was more important more influential on a Minnesota team that obviously won a lot more games than the Kings. And so the win total came into effect too. And that's not on Malik Monk. But I just think that when you're honoring Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, MVP, obviously, I think wins are baked in, because what is the point of being the best at fill in the blank if it didn't help your team win a lot of games?
Mm. Howard, my final question for you, man, before I let you go. You brought up Malik Monk. We're talking about Sixth Man of the Year. You know, we talk about patience with this team. Do they need to re-sign Malik Monk? Like, if they lose Malik Monk, how big of an impact is that on this team?
I think he'd be a huge loss. Yeah. I really do. I love watching that guy play, and I like everything about him. Like, and I just his personality. Just like there's just an energy there, and a confidence and a swagger and an aggression. All these things that you love to see in a player. I love what he's grown into. You know, he was basically like left for dead in Charlotte, but you know, everybody's left for dead in Charlotte. And the way he's revived his career and become a really important player and a really valuable one, which is why they might lose him, right? Because teams with cap room are going to come chasing, and the Kings are limited in what they can pay, and they might lose him. I do think they should, you know, easy for me to say, cause it's not my, you know, checkbook or luxury tax bill, but like, I think they should do everything possible to re-sign him. It's hard in a salary cap league to replace a guy when you lose him. Just because, you know, he's making X amount doesn't mean you can go out and pay the same amount to somebody else because you're over the cap. So it's hard. And then so now the task becomes find the next diamond in the rough. Yeah. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out in a couple months.
Gotcha. And Howard, before we let you go, I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for joining us, of course. But years ago, during the heyday of the Kings-Lakers rivalry, and you were writing for, I believe, the Times. Daily News, pardon me. On this station, we did a bit, you know, I think it was on a game day, and I sent my partner out to the hotel where the Lakers were early in the morning, and he knocked on Shaq's door, and he had, like, Free Throw Shooting for Dummies, a book we made, and he brought him some bricks. And you wrote about it, and you wrote about how, you know, I think you called it, the hometown radio station, their lame bit, which was fun. But you talked to Shaq. You asked Shaq, and Shaq said something like, if I'd opened the door and those guys were there, I would have killed them. And I think about that sometimes when I see Shaq, and I realize, yeah, he probably would have. So hey, that was an important lesson. You know, think of the consequences of things. So I just wanted to thank you for that, because I do. I think of that. I see Shaq, and I think, wow, I'm lucky I didn't lose a friend that day. So thank you for getting Shaq's view of that.
Absolutely. If I'm remembering correctly, because that was like, there was only one hotel. It was the Hyatt, and like the Sheraton hadn't even been built yet, I don't think. And there were very few places where cities where the media would actually stay at the team hotel, but that was one of them. So I heard early in the morning, one of those mornings, maybe that morning, people banging on doors trying to find the Laker players. And we were never on the same floor as them, right? There's not a chance in hell that they would ever put, you know, beat writers on the same floors as the team. But somebody was banging on doors trying to find them, I think. And, yeah, it was probably you guys. Thanks.
I don't know, because my friend.
Was the same year that Kobe got food poisoning?
I think it was. And, yeah, don't. Yeah, we had nothing.
That one wasn't you guys.
Nothing
right?
to do with that. Yeah, crazy times. I don't think my buddy was really. He was so scared. I think he was barely not, you know. I don't think he was pounding on the doors there, but. Obviously, it could have gone sideways on us. So anyway, thanks, Howard. And it's a wonderful piece. Thanks for explaining it to us. We hope to catch up with you again soon.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
All right, Howard. Take care, man.
The pride of UC Davis.
Yes.
Howard Beck.
Great guy. Great guy, Howard is. Good sport, too. He's awesome. That's
Speaking of national media, you won't believe this. Even your buddy Hollinger. I know I mentioned
Even
Hollinger says the Kings' outlook is very promising. Okay. Well, look at that when we come right back. Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports. Chatting with Howard Beck. Brought back memories of the Lakers funeral that we had way back when. Next time I do one, I'm going to invite Jamal Murray to the Laker funeral.
Okay. Dude, he's given him plenty of nightmares over the years.
Here's the problem I have with the whole Kings Nuggets thing. And I understand that the front office looks at the Nuggets as a team whose blueprint you'd like to follow. You've mentioned that. I get that. Yeah. I mean, to look at Denver and go, we'd like to do it that way. Yeah, I get that. That makes sense. Except the thing is with Denver, the key move in everything they've accomplished is that with the 41st pick in the 2014 draft, they got the best player in the world.
That
doesn't happen.
And that's what I was trying to ask Howard about, Howard Beck of the Ringer.
Because ultimately, when you look at champions, usually it goes to a team with a top five guy in the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giannis, Jokic, Steph, Kawhi at the time, LeBron. Like, it goes to... So how do you get that guy? Can De'Aaron be that guy? Or do you have to figure out another way to get to be that guy?
Or do the Kings try to thread the needle and be the 0-4 Pistons?
That's tough. Think about it. You got to go back to 0-4 the last time that's happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
And the thing about that team is I think those guys were great players. They just weren't widely recognized as such.
Yeah. And you may have to be that. But that's sad in the NBA, man, because if we're being real, you look at the Western Conference, and this is why I ask Howard this. Is Anthony Edwards the guy yet?
On that team?
Like, in terms of, is he a top 10 player in the league right now?
Anthony Edwards, I'd say yeah, off the top of my head.
Okay.
Without breaking it down. Yeah.
No, what do you say, Jay? Interesting, too, thing, fellas. That Pistons team has two Hall of Famers now.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And a great Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah.
And Tayshaun
Prince. And a Hall of Fame coach.
When people said, oh, there's no superstars, they were just kind of wrong.
Right.
They didn't recognize how good those guys
were. Yeah, those guys, exactly. And that's the thing about the NBA. And if you go through the NBA, look at the Celtics. And I keep bringing it. As great as Tatum is, they haven't even won it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to have a top five guy, and then you got to surround them with talent.
Mm-hmm.
And so this goes back to, you know, somebody asked on the text, should we trade De'Aaron Fox? I say no, but the question is, how do we put ourselves in the caliber of being a champion? As great as Devin Booker is, he hasn't won a championship. He's made it. But, like, you got Devin Booker, and it's hard to win a title, man.
I still think this is one of the issues for the Kings.
Yeah.
Come after me. You know, you say, you guys are always pandering. I'm not pandering here. This, I think, echoes a question that Jay has had for us. It's funny because, and I know I told you this yesterday, Kyle, Sunday in my house, there was an argument between my wife and one of my daughters about how good De'Aaron Fox was. But I wonder if is there a question as to whether he is good enough to be that guy that you're talking about? And I know a lot of people would say, yes, he is. What's wrong? Of course he is. But I still think that he still needs to get better for them to get to where they want to
get to. Yeah, and he said the other day during his exit interviews with the media, he still has room to grow in his game. And that's why I've said I would like the ball in his hands more so I can see if he can be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Average 30 and 9 assists with 5 or 6 rebounds. Like, I feel like because we run the offense through Domantas Sabonis, and last year was an elite offense, we know that. I don't know if we're seeing the best version of De'Aaron Fox yet. His numbers have gone up. His scoring has gone up. But I would like to see him be more of a playmaker as well. More of an initiator of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Boston, Tatum. Tatum has the ball in his hands all the time. Like, they got Drew Holiday, but Drew Holiday is not the prototypical point guard. I look at Minnesota. Anthony Edwards brings the ball up a lot of time.
Well, they do have Conley, though.
But they got Conley, but it's different, though. It's different. They're not running their offense as an equal opportunity offense. Anthony Edwards is the guy, and he's initiating a lot of it, and his playmaking is on display. Oh, they just turned it over. Gobert turns it over.
Is it ESPN? There's a piece today. Why do so many players hate Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, because that was in the anonymous poll. Uh-huh. He was the most hated player, overrated player.
Most overrated.
Yeah, most overrated player.
Yeah.
I don't know, man, because we're talking about winning championships. And the Kings are in a tough spot because you got Fox and Sabonis. That's your core. But is that good enough?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Maybe, like you said earlier, we become the Pistons. Keegan gets better. You trade for a Jeremy Grant or something. And you just have wild depth where you got four guys that can score 20 or more a night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
On the text line here. Hey, Whitey. Hey, Drapes. Hey, everybody. Has been ducking it all year. Can you please address the fact that the Kings' problem is their offense. Every time they've lost this year, Coach Brown has said, we couldn't buy a bucket. I'm always wanting them to mix it up on their offense. Fox can't really pass. And
some bonus.
But there's no motion from the other players. They just stand in the corner and wait for the handoff. Thank you. Thank you, 209.
I agree with you, 209.
There's a big problem this year.
With the offense, yes. Yeah. And I've said it time and time again. We need to diversify the offense. We need to have different looks out of our offense. And I felt like too many times teams would take away our traditional offense, and we didn't have, and especially with no Malik Monk, we didn't have playmakers, guys who could say, shoot, the offense bogged down, give me the ball, I'll make something happen. We didn't have enough guys that could make something happen out of nothing.
Mm-hmm. And then the purpose of any offense is to get good shots, and then that's why Mike Brown kept saying, you get to spray threes, we get those open shots. But if they're not going in,
they're
then obviously,
yeah. Right, it, yeah. You know,
and
we,
too many times they did not fall in, so maybe that's not the best offense.
We keep talking about what do the Kings need, and it's clear it's not just one thing, right? It's to me, you got to get a deeper bench. To me, we need Keegan Murray to, you know, excel and be better. To me, you also need another ball handler, playmaker. You need another defender, 3-and-D guy. I think we're about 3 or 4 pieces away, Whitey,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
From really contending for a championship.
Mm-hmm. Hi, fellas. Eric with Fat Cat here. How can he vote Nas when his stats are padded from starting? This is only based on team and standings. Yeah, he's talking about Howard Beck, who was honest enough to say, yeah, I had Malik Monk second. Nas Reed first. That's looks like maybe that's the way it's trending, and if it continues that way and we find out the voting goes that way tomorrow, a lot of Kings fans are going to be very upset.
Yeah, and rightfully so. And I get Nas Reed is tremendous. Ultimately, what it comes down to is a couple of things. The Timberwolves are winners. They are third best record in the West. But also, I feel like they're a sexier team. Like the Timberwolves are sexy now. Nas Reed, sexy now. Nobody's talking sexy about the Sacramento Kings.
That was last year.
Last year was our sexy year where we're the darlings of the NBA. Now, honestly, we're the underachievers of the NBA when you look at it. And Howard Beck mentioned it. He would have voted Bogdanovich if the Atlanta Hawks would have been any good, but they weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason why Nas Reed gets the edge is because they're one of the darlings of the NBA, and they've won number 3 seed this year.
And it's hard to argue with the notion that you should vote for the guys on teams that do better.
Right. Because ultimately it's about winning, right?
Yeah.
And Nas Reed helps them. And so I don't want to, I think Malik Monk's importance to this team, if we would have finished in the top 6, I think it would have.
If he hadn't gotten hurt, maybe they would have.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think if we would have actually made the playoffs, finished top 6, we'd have a stronger case for Malik.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We'll go right back to the phones when we come back, and we'll find out. You know, Drape says he's thinking of just, you're going to block Hollinger or just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about blocking him.
See if this changes your mind, what he has to say this week about the Kings. When we wrap things up, Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports. Jay's been getting compliments, and deservedly so, for...
Yeah, the cuts he's playing today, huh?
Yeah. Big Bee Gees guy?
Not necessarily big Bee Gees guy, but they're all right, you know?
Do you know the song Jive Talkin'?
Yeah, I don't.
It starts... It's really interesting. There's a documentary on the Bee Gees that they had a comeback album. Yeah, okay, this is how the song starts. And they were telling the story that every day they would... I think they were recording in Miami, and they had to go over these tracks... this road was bumpy, and it would as they drove the car to the studio.
Oh, really?
One of the guys said, hey!
That sounds
okay. So that's what became the opening of that song way, way, way back when. Yeah. So who knows what Jay's going to have for us tomorrow. I love his theme days. Are you taking suggestions like from listeners on theme days, or is like, nah, you don't.
I mean, I'm open. I'm open to a suggestion. We're here to please our listeners.
Yeah, because it's a very high level that he operates at.
I asked someone, you know, what they were feeling. You know, it just depends on
yes.
the mood.
Yes, we appreciate that. Now, you have a problem, though, with Hollinger.
Yeah, it's just, you know, his tweets are getting at me now. Yeah, he's just kind of annoying to me right now. And so I literally this morning, or it might have been yesterday, I thought, you know what? I might have to mute or block this guy. Like, I just don't want to see his tweets coming across anymore.
Are you following him?
I think I am.
Oh,
yeah.
See, that's the first part
yeah,
right
I
there.
Might have to unfollow. No, but this was, I followed him way back in the day, and I
sure.
just never.
And he doesn't return your calls or requests, Jay?
Yeah, he won't hit me back on the text line anymore. I'll try again today or tomorrow.
That's yeah. all right. Yeah. He wrote this in The Athletic, why the Warriors, Bulls, Hawks, and Kings face tough choices after playing tournament exits. And he says of the Kings, he says of the four teams, the Kings are probably the least disappointed. He also says take a moment to appreciate the quiet miracle of Sacramento now being a real, respectable basketball team.
Like, oh, that's how it is in Sac. It's lit.
He says it would have seemed almost unimaginable 2 years ago that a 46-win season from the Kings would be regarded as moderately disappointing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. Yeah, he says the Kings can trade 3 first-round picks on draft night if they want to take a big swing, which I'm not sure is that wild of a strategy at this point if an elite forward becomes available.
Hmm.
He says, more likely, probably sensibly, they should take a hard look at upgrading the power forward spot using the 13th pick and a couple of contracts. So basically, it sounds like he's thinking, look, theoretically, they're set up for a solid half-decade run.
He said that?
On the Kings. Then he says, but in this conference, they may need to take some risks just to tread water, let alone move up. But.
Okay, all right. Some optimism right there.
The nicest things he's ever said about the Kings, perhaps.
So you're saying I shouldn't mute him then or block him?
Well, I wanted you to consider that before you made that final decision.
Nah, I'm not. I'm still not on board with that, Hollinger. I'm serious. I might mute him or just unfollow him. How about that? Maybe I'll just unfollow him.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he comes back on the show. Are you back in, or you
yeah,
depends on what he says?
No, if you don't come on the show.
I need him.
Kyle
to,
Draper is going to unfollow.
Yeah, I
you.
Need him to atone for his Kings hate over the years. And you know, here's something else that's bothering me right now, fellas. And I just realized this: who does Howard Beck write for?
Ringer.
Ringer.
What was Kevin O'Connor's excuse for not coming on?
Oh, Ringer.
The Ringer doesn't like us going on and doing radio.
Oh.
But yet Howard Beck did it.
Michael Pena did it.
Michael Pena did it.
Yeah.
I think he's ducking the smoke, just like Hollinger is. Hollinger and Kevin O'Connor both ducking the smoke right now. I'm tired, man, these guys. I'm frustrated.
Maybe
about
they ducking the Kyle Draper smoke.
No, because
maybe that's part
you
of it
thought
too.
That with Isaiah Thomas and what happened. I went down, hollered at IT, got him on the show. And so...
But see, you and IT have history, so he knows you. He knows where you're coming from. You know, he knows your heart, as they say. Hollinger and Kevin O'Connor, they might be your guy, but Kevin O'Connor might be your guy, but from afar.
Kevin O'Connor, he is my guy, but he knows I'm a come at his butt. Can I say? No, I don't want to say that word. I'm a come at his butt. He
what,
knows.
Ass?
Yeah. Oh, you said it.
Yeah, you say
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude, you said it.
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah, he know I'm coming for that ass.
Yeah.
See, you got to say it like
well, I didn't
that
say
ass.
That. I wouldn't say that. That was Drapes.
Have you told him that?
What,
that
O'Connor?
When he comes, oh.
No, I just think he's scared. Yeah, you know, but here's the thing, and this is why I respect Amin El-Hassan. Amin knew the smoke was going to come his way here in Sacramento. He knew there was going to be some backlash.
Oh, yeah.
And he dealt with it head on.
Mm-hmm.
He said, come on, let's talk about it. Kevin O'Connor is hiding behind his keyboard.
Nah, I'm not really supposed right, to. I'm not, my mom says it's too windy.
You know, Bill Simmons might get mad at me. So, dude, get on the air and explain yourself. Be a grown man. Especially because I gave that dude his start back in the day.
Oh, you gave him a start?
Yes. He was a little guy. Let me, all right.
That's unforgivable then.
I gave him his start. He was this little guy in Boston, this dweeb, shopping around his draft guide.
Yeah.
It was like stapled together. It wasn't even in a binder. And so going into the draft, we started using it. I was like, all right, Kevin O'Connor's. And then all of a sudden, Bill Simmons heard him. Yeah. He's like, oh, come on over here.
And thanks to you and your kindness. Thanks to me.
Look, you know what? I'm going to text him right now. I know we're up against it. And I'm going to see if he actually acknowledges I gave him his start. see what he says. I'm really going to text him right now. Hey, hold on for a sec. I'm going to voice text this. Hold on here. Three. Hold up. Hey, Kevin, it's Drapes. I need you to do me a favor. No, don't do me a favor. Hold on. I want to rephrase that.
Yeah, you don't want that. We're not begging for nothing.
Just acknowledge I gave you your career start by using your draft guide back in the day in Boston. All right, I hit send.
Now come on the show. The people of Sacramento want to hear from Kevin O'Connor. Like, he is one of those antagonistic, you know, villains for Sacramento.
I know.
I don't know why.
Yeah. I sent it. Let's see if he texts back. I said, now come on my radio show.
Was it one thing or a series of things that he said that...
I feel like I lost track, fellas.
I feel like it was all about Domas, right? Is it Domas slander all the time?
It's a
lot of Domas slander. Oh, and it was the Malik Monk slander, too. Remember I said, where would you rank Malik? And he said anywhere from 80 to 120.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Right in that slot.
But didn't he double down? He was giving out like a thermos and a lunch pail or something from Sacramento.
From King's PR.
Oh yeah, he did. Oh yeah, he tweeted
Sabonis
that out.
And Fox All-Star campaign. Yeah,
you got like there are a few people. Uh-oh.
No, he has a response. Oh, okay. I'm just reading this text that I sent to. Oh, it's so funny, man. Y'all got me crazy, man.
Kevin's got to come number. On. Kevin's got to come on. He's gonna come on.
In one of these days, we'll get him on.
Season is done. Right. So now, you know, we can't anything active. He's got opportunity and time.
Can you send another one and tell Kevin O'Connor and say, and tell Hollinger I'm coming for that ass? Can you do that?
No, I'm not going to do that. I got some class, Whitey. Come on, man. I'm not that kind of dude. That's funny. Oh, my gosh.
Go ahead. You posted up on Twitter and an hour.
I know, right? I know. They're going to block me. Shoot, I'm talking about blocking him. He's going to wind up blocking me and everything. Let me just end this right here.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the 209. And maybe this is the same guy who heard Devin Booker with some rumblings and wanted to trade De'Aaron Fox. Zach LaVine for the 13th pick.
If you can do that.
Go for it, Harbaugh.
You're the executive of the year if you can pull that off.
Zach LaVine for the 13th pick.
Uh-huh. Just a little more involved than that.
Right.
I don't know that the salary slots match.
Why would somebody say that, man? What are we doing?
Fans are going to fan. No, people are looking for solutions.
No, the word is you could get Tatum for 2 second rounders. So why would we waste the 13th on Zach LaVine when you could get Tatum for 2 second rounders?
Do we really want Zach LaVine, by the way? You do, huh?
I'm 100% in on Zach LaVine right now.
Then I'll have two guys on my roster making 40.
I don't care about the money. You already hamstrung salary cap wise anyway. It's not like you're going to go out there and sign a big name free agent like that. So
then I got to pay De'Aaron. Although if he's my own, I can go.
Yeah, you can go. Oh, hey, it's Vivek's pocketbook, not a wallet, not mine. You know,
I'm wondering if the Bulls maybe they see that like we got to get rid of this guy, right?
I think so. They got to do something, right?
Barrel on him. Well, if there's not a big market for him, and that's that type of risky move with some upside that the Kings have to be willing to take.
You know what's interesting though. DeMar DeRozan's up also. So if you're the Bulls, are you hitting the full reset right now? Lose DeRozan, trade LaVine, you know?
Did you hear the comments of some of the players after their loss? They were saying, who was it? Was it Kobe White saying, I don't care what we do. We just have to win. We just have to figure something out. They're tired. Some of the Bulls players are tired of them just running it back. We're going to run it back. Run it back. And then they're out of the play-in every year.
Right. They're tired of that. And we don't want to become the Bulls.
No.
We don't want to become them.
No, we do not. Thanks for being with us today. We're back with you tomorrow. We'll get you ready for the NFL draft, which is coming up, of course, right around the corner. And stick around for CBS Sports Radio next on Sacktown Sports.